Hey fam, what's up? This is FaZe. I want to thank all y'all for coming in and listening to me. I know you didn't have to do it, but you did it anyway. And thank you. You can reach me at FaZe380, or you can come and join me at anchor.fm/FaZe5. That's where you can join my little rendezvous in the thought or process as we ride down the road to the world of destruction. Come in and join me. If you got a comment, you can post it at the bottom. You got a voice that you want to be heard, just send it to my Instagram, FaZe380. Everybody do their part, and the world can be a better place. I ain't here for no drama. I ain't here for no problems. I ain't here for no static. I'm here to learn. I'm here to learn. And I'm here to learn.
I hear you breathing, but your heart no longer sounds strong. But you're kind of scared of dying, so you hold on. And you keep on blacking out. Your pulse is slow. Stop trying to fight the reaper. Just relax and let it go. Because there's no way you can fight it, though you'll still try. And you can try it till you fight it, but you'll still die. Your spirit leaves your body and your mind clears. The rigor mortis starts to set that you find it. You start your journey in the outer space. You see yourself in the light, but you're still feeling out of place. So you're standing in the tunnel of eternal life. And you've seen the one you've never learned to love in life. Make a choice, let it go. Back it up. If you ain't at peace with God, you need to patch it up. But if you're ready, close your eyes and we can set it free. And here lies a man not scared to die. May he rest in peace. And still got to wonder why. I ain't never seen a man cry till I seen a man die.
Do you guys remember how in December, Niger kicked out the French military from their country because they're trying to get rid of Western influences? Well, today was announced that Niger told the United States to leave. The United States has one of their biggest military bases in Africa, in Niger, worth $100 million. And they said that they were there to train the Niger military against Islamic extremism, but they have done nothing in the past decades that they've been there other than steal resources, honestly. And Niger has finally asked them to leave. And Niger actually says that they don't even know how many American citizens are on their soil because America refused to give that information to them. But Niger has formally asked them to leave. The Pentagon has not made a comment on this, whether they're going to leave or not, which is crazy that a country has to ask the United States to leave and America can decide, no, we're not gonna do that. But Niger, Burkina Faso, and Mali have teamed up to try to get rid of Western influences from their countries. They've already kicked out French presence in their country, and now they're kicking out American presence. And I'm so proud of them. I hope every African country and every country that has an American base in their country follows suit and kicks American out of their country. There is no reason why America should have a military bases in over 80 countries. It is absolutely ridiculous. Every single country should follow suit and kick America out of their soil. Do you guys remember? And this is why I could care less if TikTok gets banned. It is so frustrating being on this app because it is so hard to try to share information. Even if we can cite our sources, TikTok still says it's unverified claims. This is one of my mutuals, and she was talking about how Israel kidnapped 70 Palestinian orphans whose parents they killed, took them from Gaza, and transported them to the West Bank in Bethlehem. And they did it at the bequest of Germany for some reason. She cited her sources, and her source is literally coming from the Times of Israel, and it's quoting Ben-Gvir, who is a top Israeli official, and who literally was slamming the operation, demanding to know why they're taking Palestinian children instead of trying to get their own hostages out. Because Ben-Gvir, he's disgusting as a person, but he literally is for his people because he literally does not care about Palestinians. He wants to kill all of them. And he was wondering why Palestinian children are being evacuated from Gaza to Bethlehem and they're not trying to locate the hostages in Gaza instead. A top Israeli official confirming it is not enough for this app. And then when I tried to share the video, this is what came up. It literally said, "Are you sure this video was flagged for unverified content?" Screw you, TikTok. I hope you get banned tomorrow at this point. I could care less. American apps do the same thing as this freaking app does. So what is the point? But y'all should really go watch the video. One thing that Israel has been doing the past couple of months is where they'll commit an act that's so egregious, that is so horrifying, that the international community all is outraged at the same time. They did it when they attacked Al-Shifa Hospital. We were all outraged that they would attack a hospital, and now every single hospital in Gaza is completely out. They are running, some of them are running on backup generators, and some of them are just empty buildings where people can just go and shelter in place. They did that when they attacked Jabalia refugee camp, and they did it to all the refugee camps in Gaza and continue to attack Jabalia not once, twice. They've attacked Jabalia refugee camp at least 10 times. And just recently with the flower massacre, they attacked people that were going for humanitarian aid. The international community was outraged. How dare they attack people that they are starving and that they're gonna go get humanitarian aid. But since then, they have attacked people that have gone to get humanitarian aid. They have taken distribution centers from UNRWA and attacked those areas and killed people that were looking for humanitarian aid. Within the past 24 hours, they've committed 13 massacres, killed 149 people, and injured 300 people. And all those people were waiting for humanitarian aid. They have now made it so that the international community has moved on, because the first one was so egregious that these are smaller in comparison and nobody seems to be batting an eye. The international 2 days ago, this political ad came out where it said that the United States privately told Israel the kind of Rafah campaign that they would be willing to support. Basically gave them a plan of how to kill Palestinians. And today it was announced that Netanyahu and his government have approved a Rafah attack plan after discussing it with the United States and getting their approval. Because this is the United States' genocide against the Palestinian people. Because this has been the United States' campaign against the Palestinian people. The United States was the reason why Israel was created, and they're the reason why this genocide is still continuing. They're the reason why more children have died in Gaza than all the world conflict for the past 4 years combined. And now they just gave them the approval to attack the most heavily dense populated area in all of Gaza. They pushed 1.5 million people into a small area of land, and they're about to start attacking it. This is Rafah. It is so heavily populated that there cannot be a grain of rice that falls from the sky without hitting more than one person. And while the Biden administration can pretend to be the good guy and drop humanitarian aid and killing people in the process and taking out solar panels that are on top of roofs and building a stupid port to pretend like they want to get in more humanitarian aid, they're the reason why this genocide is continuing, and they just gave Israel the green light to massacre a bunch of people. 5 children were murdered because of these stupid airdrops, because instead of convincing the Israeli government to open the border and let in more aid and let in more trucks, they would rather make a spectacle out of it, and it resulted in 5 children dying. And guess what? Not a single country is claiming credit for this one, because it resulted in the death of Palestinians, because they were all ready to take credit for it. The Jordan president was taking pictures aboard the freaking jet while he was dropping the aid. United States was making a spectacle out of dropping the humanitarian aid. But because this one resulted in the death of Palestinians, none of them want to take credit for it. But we all know this is the United States. The United States did this airdrop, and they're refusing to take credit right now because it looks bad for them. The parachutes are exactly identical to the ones that the United States used in their earlier drop, but the Pentagon says that it wasn't the United States that did this, because they're trying to be the good guy and it looks bad if they killed children. Mind you, they have been killing children this entire time. The 15,000 children that are dead is because of the United States and their unwavering support of Israel and their continued supplying of weapons and funding to Israel to continue their genocide. But no, they're not going to take credit for this one, because it resulted in the 5 deaths of children, because everybody can see that these stupid airdrops are actually ridiculous, that more aid can get in through the border, and this airdrops only feed 1% of the people in Gaza, but they want this because they want the spectacle. And the Biden administration is trying to use these airdrops to show that he's a good guy and that he's doing everything he can for the Palestinians. No, he's not. If he really wanted to do something for the Palestinians, he would force Israel to open the border. All he has to say is that he's pausing funding to Israel.
Okay, here we go, man. Y'all know what time it is. It's sauce time. Okay, remember I told y'all a couple of days ago that the reason why they were distracting y'all with TikTok is because these police departments got served to stand down? Remember that? Well, it's Saturday, March 16th. Woke up this morning. There's a part of Ohio where the whole police department resigned. They ain't resigned. They're getting pushed out of here because they ain't supposed to be here. Remember I told y'all? Them folks that look like me, them Indian folks, has come back for their land, man. I've been trying to tell y'all this big shit going down, man. There's constantly big shit going down. Remember in Florida where all those politicians say they ain't coming back? They're retiring? They're resigning? Remember, just a couple of days ago, like, what, 50 congressmen said they're not coming back? This shit is done, bro. It's collapsed. If y'all didn't pay attention, Washington, D.C.'s been up for sale since August of last year, 2023. October 31st, the contract for the fake-ass United States government had expired, right? See, United States is not a country. It's not a government. It's a bullshitter. This country is called Turtle Island, right? So what you're seeing is these Indians, people that look like me, coming back for their fucking land, right? Now, the problem gonna be for them is, you on our land, you can't tell us what the fuck to do, but guess what? If you're doing business here, you're gonna have to cut them rent checks. Major League Baseball, NBA, NFL, college football, college basketball, Home Depot, Lowe's, huh? Y'all gonna have to start cutting them checks to be here, bruh. That day has come, or y'all can get the fuck on. It's gonna be a long ride back to that Caucasus Mountain, huh? It's gonna be a long ride back to the Caucasus Mountain. I'm trying to tell y'all, man. Y'all know what time it is. We here. Stop letting them motherfuckers distract y'all with that bullshit, huh? Stop letting them motherfuckers distract y'all with that bullshit. I keep trying to tell y'all this big shit popping. If y'all ain't been paying attention, I've been posting all these videos of them evicting courthouses, judges, CPS, CIAs, FBIs, because they don't supposed to be here. All them alphabet gangs is illegal. They ain't supposed to be here. They ain't supposed to be here. See, these white boys running now. They talk all that shit now and they running. I'm trying to tell y'all, pay attention. All these police departments are going to start slowly disappearing because they have to. The domino effect is here. All these police departments have to stand down in this country because they're a foreign entity. The courthouse is a foreign entity. Huh? Huh? I'm trying to tell y'all, man, big shit popping. Just stay focused. But y'all know I got the sauce, so I'm going to post all the shit later. Just give me some time. I'm going to post the shit because you know I got the sauce so y'all can see it. Boy, I try to tell y'all, that goddamn wet dog and golf ball, they're going to be madder than a motherfucker because you know they like the debunk shit. But they're going to be madder than a motherfucker. I'm trying to tell y'all, man, just be safe out there Saturday.
Niger has announced an end to a military relationship with the United States in yet another anti-West move following the expulsion of French soldiers in late 2023. Now, Niger said on Saturday, March 16, that it had revoked with immediate effect an agreement that allowed U.S. military personnel to operate in the West African nation. The civilian employees of the American Department of Defense are also wanted out. Some 1,100 American soldiers are stationed in Niger to help fight militant insurgency. The foreign troops operate two bases, including a $100 million drone base in Niger's central region of Agadez. Before Niger's announcement of an end to military ties, the U.S. had sent a delegation to hold talks with the West African nation's ruling junta in efforts to renew a military cooperation agreement. The American delegation comprised the Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, Molly Fee, the commander of the U.S. Africa Command General, Michael Langley, among others. The team was initially scheduled to stay in Niamey for 2 days on March 12th and 13th, but extended their trip by a day after the senior representatives failed to meet Niger's transitional leader, Abdurrahman Chani. In a televised address on March 16th, Niger's transitional government spokesman, Colonel Amadou Abdraman, said the U.S. delegation did not follow diplomatic protocol and that Niger was not informed about the composition of the delegation, the date of its arrival, or the agenda. Abdraman suggested in his statement that the U.S. was not happy with Niger's affiliation with Russia, saying Niger regrets the intention of the American delegation to deny the sovereign Nigerian people the right to choose their partners and types of partnerships capable of truly helping them fight against terrorism. Amadou Abdraman, further said the American delegation had threatened to retaliate against Niger for failing to heed their demand. Niger says presence of U.S. soldiers in the country is illegal, terming it a unilaterally imposed agreement of 2012. In October 2023, the U.S. officially declared that President Mohamed Bazoum's July 26th ouster was a coup. In essence, that meant that the military support and aid that the U.S. offers Niger would be cut. But in December, the U.S. said it was willing to restore aid and security ties if Niger met certain conditions. Senior Pentagon officials want to keep a presence in Niger, saying American troops would help in the fight against militant insurgency. Haiti's Prime Minister Ariel Henry has announced his resignation. This comes after days of unrest in the Caribbean nation of 11 million people. Several quarters in Haiti, including a dangerous coalition of gangs, had demanded Henry's resignation. Violent groups warned of deadly clashes if the 74-year-old refuses to step down. In a video message announcing his resignation, Henry said he and his government will leave office immediately after the installation of a transitional council. Father thanked the Haitian people for the stint he served as Prime Minister.
I'm asking all Haitians to remain calm and do everything they can for peace and stability, to come back as fast as possible for the good of the country.
Henry was selected as Prime Minister by President Jovenel Moïse on July 5, 2021. 2 days later, Moïse was assassinated in the capital, Port-au-Prince. Henry thereafter took over as head of state and promised to leave office by February 7, 2024, but delayed elections over alleged unrest in the country. The Prime Minister has been accused of failing to improve Haiti's economy and being a proxy of the U.S., allegations that he denies. After violence broke out in Haiti recently, he has been unable to return to the country. He is reportedly stuck in Puerto Rico after trips to Guyana and Kenya. A growing number of violent conflicts in different parts of the world has prompted the Secretary General of the United Nations, Antonio Guterres, to raise the alarm, saying the world is becoming less safe by the day and more untold suffering is experienced. The UN estimates that at least 2 billion people, or a quarter of the world's population, live in conflict-affected areas. In 2022 alone, 55 conflicts were recorded in 38 countries. The Geneva Academy says more than 45 armed conflicts are taking place in the Middle East and Africa today. Tens of millions of people in Africa are facing serious challenges, including homelessness and food insecurity as a result of violent clashes. In the north of the continent, Libya has endured years of unrest since the death of longtime ruler Muammar Gaddafi in October 2011. In the southern Africa region, Mozambique says at least 100,000 people have recently been displaced from their homes by armed militants. In West Africa, several countries, including Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger, are grappling with regular insurgent attacks. In Eastern Africa, regional forces in Ethiopia have repeatedly clashed with the country's army, whereas Sudan has been in turmoil since April 2023. In Central Africa, armed militants are causing the government of the Democratic Republic of Congo a major headache. In all these conflicts, there are underlying issues, with some having existed for years. The leading causes of conflicts in Africa, according to documented reports, are territorial disputes, fight over natural resources, clashes over control for power, quest for recognition, election-related disagreements, ethno-faith differences, and citizens' dissatisfaction with the government of the day. In some African countries, the conflicts date back to the colonial period, when the nations were seeking independence from their colonial rulers. And after independence was granted, the countries clashed over borderlines, official language, resources, governance, among other factors. Several efforts have been made to resolve the long-standing and emerging conflicts in Africa, including mobilizing regional blocs such as ECOWAS of West Africa, SADC of Southern Africa, and IGAD of Eastern Africa to act as mediators. Though the regional bodies have to some degree been successful in their missions, critics argue that more still needs to be done to rid the continent of deadly and costly disputes. According to Oxfam, Africa loses more than $18 billion yearly as a result of armed conflicts, money that would have otherwise been channeled to development. The African Union Commission Chairperson Moussa Faki Mahamat believes every African has a role to play in promoting genuine peace in the region. Reports by the African Center for Strategic Studies says that more than 40.4 million Africans have been forcibly displaced by conflicts. Dialogue, compromise, and finding mutually acceptable solutions are some of the interventions adopted by conflicting countries to foster long-term peace. In January this year, the Namibian government slammed Germany for pledging support to Israel in a genocide case filed at the International Court of Justice against Israel by South Africa. Israeli troops have claimed the lives of more than 30,800 Palestinians in Gaza since October 7, 2023, gory figures that Namibia says are a sad reminder of the German genocide against its people. The genocide in Namibia is described as one of the most serious crimes against humanity committed in the 20th century. It happened between 1904 and 1908 when Namibia was under German colonial rule. Thousands of people lost their lives at the hands of German forces. The Namibian ethnic groups of Herero and Nama bore the harshest brunt. The massacre has its genesis in 1884 when German settlers enslaved Namibia's indigenous communities and used the local people as laborers. Prior to colonization, the Herero, Nama, Damara, San, and the Ovambo communities lived freely in Namibia. After Germany colonized the modern-day Namibia, the indigenous communities lobbied each other to fight against the German oppression. In 1994, the Herero community led by Chief Samuel Maharero staged a rebellion against the German rulers. Taking advantage of their advanced weaponry, the Germans prevailed, but Namibians continued their push against oppression. Back in Germany, the government was becoming more impatient with its representatives in Namibia, whom they accused of being slow in containing the rebellion. As a result, in May 1904, Germany sent General Lothar von Trotha to ruthlessly deal with the uprising in Namibia. In October that year, von Trotha issued an extermination order saying, and I quote, "Every Herero, whether armed or unarmed, will be shot. I shall not accept any more women or children." After 6 months of brutal elimination of Namibians, largely members of the Herero community, the German government ordered that the surviving members of the ethnic group be detained in concentration camps. In 1905, members of the Nama ethnic group also revolted against the Germans and engaged the colonizers in a guerrilla warfare for 2 years. The German forces claimed the lives of more than 60,000 members of the Herero community, that is nearly 80%, and 10,000 members of the Nama community, nearly 50%, between 1904 and 1908. Relations between Namibia and Germany have been strained ever since. In 2015, Germany engaged Namibia in negotiations over the atrocities, and in 2018, Berlin returned skulls and other remains of massacred Namibians. The remains had been used in the colonial era experiments to assert claims of European racial superiority. In 2021, Germany, for the first time, admitted that it had committed genocide in Namibia. Aggrieved Namibians are seeking reparations by Germany over the genocide.
We're a country that was wronged by Germany in the past. What we are looking for, we are seeking for justice. That is now reparation for the damage that has been done historically by Germany. And we are looking for apology.
Even as calls for reparations increase, the Namibian government has a disclaimer.
We are demanding reparation. But I should also make it clear that no amount of money would replace the lives that were lost.
Images of Haiti Prime Minister in Puerto Rico has cleared uncertainty around his whereabouts. However, questions on how and when he will return to Haiti still linger as gangs back home push for his ouster. On Monday,
Armed gangs attempted to take control of the country's main airport in the capital, Port-au-Prince. The clashes between gangs and security officers paralyzed operations, with no aircraft landing or taking off. Security officers in armored trucks shot at the gangs to try and prevent them from entering the airport grounds. Scores of workers fled as the scene became frightening. Though the fight fizzled out, Haiti's security remains fragile. In efforts to contain gang disorder, the government declared a 72-hour state of emergency and night curfew following Sunday attacks on prisons in the capital. The chaos led to the escape of nearly 4,000 prisoners and the deaths of at least 12 people. This unfolded as Prime Minister Ariel Henry's whereabouts remained unknown. The traces of his public activity could be seen on his ex-social media page on March 4th when he retweeted the statement by Finance Minister Patrick Boivin announcing the state of emergency. Boivin is the country's acting prime minister after Henry flew out on official duties. Gangs, which reportedly control 80% of Port-au-Prince, have demanded Prime Minister Henry's resignation, threatening to block his return. Jimmy Barbecue Chariza, a former police officer who now heads a powerful coalition of gangs, accuses Henry of doing little to alleviate poverty in Haiti. But what is the chronology of events in relation to the recent unrest in Haiti? On February 23rd, Prime Minister Henry presided over a meeting in Port-au-Prince to plan a construction of 20 new schools in the capital. 2 days later, that is, on February the 25th, he left Haiti for Guyana for the 46th summit of the heads of state of the Caribbean community. During the meeting, which took place between February 25th and 28th, Henry reportedly told his fellow heads of state that Haiti will hold elections in mid-2025. After the meeting, Henry left for Kenya, landing in the capital Nairobi on February 29. The following day, he publicly witnessed the signing of a security agreement with Kenya, which has pledged 1,000 police officers to help fight insecurity in Haiti. Haiti has 9,000 police officers to protect 11 million people. That's according to the United Nations. During Henry's visit to Kenya, which was his last known public appearance until now, gangs warned against his return to Port-au-Prince. Haiti's President Jovenel Moïse was assassinated at his residence in the country's capital in 2021. Henry, a new resurgent turned politician, was selected by Moïse as Haiti's prime minister on July 5, 2021, 2 days to the president's death. Under a political deal following Moïse's assassination, Haiti was supposed to hold elections and Henry seat power by February 7th this year. But that has not happened.
I was frightened by the sight of a life of pain. Whether easy days or complicated, it was all the same. It was scary. The main emotion I felt was shame. Tied myself to opinions of others while depression had me change. I remain with so many thoughts of doubt. Having issues with my identity, I lost it in the crowd. But I changed. It was life that taught me how to be the man you see and hear right now.
And welcome to the breaking news. Today we've heard that President Emmanuel Macron of France has demanded that French troops be sent into Ukraine along with the rest of the NATO forces. This has come after many movements by the Russian forces, although incredibly slow and culminating over a campaign of nearly 6 months, were finally able to take the Ukrainian city of Avdiivka, and also at the exact same time that President Volodymyr Zelensky said that out of the 1 million shells that the European Union promised to send Ukraine, Ukraine has only received a third of that, at around 330,000. The French president has been outraged about this public announcement that a very small amount of European support was able to make it through, and he said that the goal set by the Europeans was entirely unrealistic due to how artillery supply chains and ammunition supply chains work. In response to this, France has said that he does want to send troops to Ukraine without any kind of possible delay. And this is something that has been causing massive upsets, not only in the Western world, as this is in contradiction to some larger nations' requests and hopes for how the war will turn out, but it also is showing that there is a massive amount of attention with the Russian Federation about this specific instance. However, France is not alone on the insistence of sending troops into Ukraine, as the Polish President Andrzej Duda also said something very similar, and said that the most heated discussion that happened in Paris revolved around the issue of sending troops to Ukraine, and here too, there was absolutely no agreement. And he said that there was no enthusiasm for the idea either when he brought it up at the time. But now, much later on, maybe several weeks later, we're starting to see that Emmanuel Macron, president of France, is certainly starting to show that this kind of an idea is gaining a massive amount of momentum, at least within the European countries that are a part of NATO. At the exact same time within Belgium, we've also heard that the NATO General Secretary has made a statement contradicting France and Poland and has said that NATO allies are providing unprecedented amounts of support for Ukraine, but there will be no combat troops representative of any NATO countries that will be on the ground in Ukraine. Somewhat showing that there is a massive disconnect in between the NATO's primary wishes or NATO's strategic interests and the individual NATO member states like France and Poland who do want to see armed forces inside of Ukraine and fighting alongside the Ukrainian armed forces. At the exact same time, Putin has threatened war over this very particular instance, and he has said that these kinds of actions will come with severe reprisals. And we can see that the Russian armed forces are actually beginning to restructure back into a Cold War kind of a command theater, or more so command centers, as we see that the Western Command District today has gone through a major restructuring, and because of this, really, the entire combat structure of the Russian armed forces will be going through a massive military restructuring. According to the information that we got today, Vladimir Putin has signed two decrees just a few hours ago, re-establishing the Leningrad Military District and the Moscow Military District. In prior times, after the fall of the Soviet Union and the creation of the Russian Federation and all of the other former Soviet republics, the Russian Federation had these two military districts as holdovers from the Cold War. During that time, the Soviet Union wished to try and create more effective and more micromanaged military districts, and so they had two separate military districts, the Leningrad Military District and the Moscow Military District. As the Russian Federation began to run into massive economic issues during the late 1990s and early 2000s, the decision was made that the Leningrad and Moscow military district would need to be axed and instead be replaced with a singular Western military district. While allowing for less combat flexibility, it did provide an easier command structure and an easier amount of maintenance, although once again, decreasing the efficiency and combat efficacy of units that fell under such a large military district. Considering that these two military districts in particular house something around 60% of the Russian Federation's entire population. However, the decision has been made once again, just today, to split the Western Military District into two completely separate ones. And this may be suggesting that the Russian Federation is starting to look at a possible war with the West, and they're beginning to structure their armed forces once more off of that older Soviet pattern where they were expecting a large land war in Europe. Going off of this, it is certainly showing that the situation is becoming incredibly strenuous. And at the very same time, we're also starting to see that the Russian Federation is beginning to protect their domestic supply of gas and oils that are being produced inside of Russia, and are now banning the gas exports from traveling abroad. According to what we found, they are going to be banning gas exports for the next 6 months, starting on March 1st in just a few days. Apparently, from what we're on,
President Vladimir Zelensky on the dire military situation in Ukraine, Zelensky saying he hopes to present a blueprint for peace to Russia in a summit this spring. Those remarks coming at a conference held to coincide with the two-year anniversary of Russia's invasion. Zelensky also saying that 31,000 Ukrainian soldiers have been killed in this war, giving the first official figure for more than a year. Joining me now are NBC News Chief Foreign Correspondent Richard Engel and former FBI Special Agent and MSNBC National Security Analyst Clint Watts. Gentlemen, I'm glad to have you both with me here. So, Richard, can you tell us, or what can you tell us about the peace plan that Zelensky plans to propose? I mean, what is his message to the world as this war is entering its third year?
It is, and right now there is a big conference going on here in Kyiv that the government has organized. They're using this moment as a restart, as a reboot, they're calling it. Yesterday, President Zelensky spoke to the Ukrainian people. He was telling them that they need to stay strong, they need to keep fighting, that they can't give in, even though it's difficult. He spoke about the need to get the soldiers more time off and to get them more consistent rotations. Today, he was really addressing the foreign media, trying to talk to the world, because they realize here that Ukraine has a crisis. They're starting to lose territory. They're low on ammunition. Supplies from the United States, weapons and ammunition, are both held up in Congress. So Zelensky's message was, we are going to try and use this moment to outline our vision for the future. And part of that vision, Alex, was this peace plan that he talked about. And he says that this is a two-step process in which, starting in the spring in Geneva, they would be a gathering of Ukrainian officials. Russia wouldn't be invited to this first peace summit, as they're describing it here in Geneva in the spring. It would be an internal meeting between Ukraine and its allies to effectively come up with terms. They would break it down into committees. They would present each argument as they would like to see it resolved. Then they would present this document collectively to the Russian side. The Russian side would study it and meet for a second peace summit to come up with just terms to end the war. So a very complicated process. I asked him, he also just gave one more thing. President Zelensky also just gave a press conference, and I asked him about the difficult situation that Ukraine finds itself in right now. My colleague from Italy, I just returned from the frontline areas in Chasiv Yar, and things look very difficult right now. By your own account, you are outgunned 7-1. The front lines aren't really moving. Where they have moved, it has been in Russia's favor. So my question is this the weakest time that Ukraine has found itself in since that initial phase of the war, when Russian troops were literally at the gates of Kyiv?
You have a complicated question. I don't think this is the weakest point. Well, it was a shocking moment on the 24th of February 2 years ago. Now it's the very strong moment for our unity. If we'll get divided with our partners and inside of Ukraine, in this case, that would be the weakest point. At this moment, we didn't have something like that. We understand there was a focus of everyone to this event, and we understand how important it was for journalists to pay attention to this tragedy. But still, the focus of the leaders was also diverted from Ukraine, and the attention was diverted, and at certain regions of the world starting to forget that we have a full-scale war.
If you've been feeling the shift in the world, here's why. We are about to enter the last period in a 180-year cycle called Period 9, according to Chinese astrology. The last 20 years was ruled by the Earth element, which is why agriculture, real estate, higher education, especially institutional education, and young men were main focus, like Mark Zuckerberg, Elon Musk, and Jeff Bezos. The next 20 years, we're shifting to the fire element, so this is all about technology, creativity, artificial intelligence, women. But what does this mean for you? Two different types of non-physical worlds are going to grow astronomically. The first is cloud-based technology, artificial intelligence, electricity, internet, 5G, anything remote, AR, VR, metaverse, ET, satellites, you name it. Yes, I do think we're going to come into alien/ET contact. The second area of non-physical world that's going to come into major focus is the spiritual world, the psychic world, the shamanic journey. There will be major conversations and developments around remote viewing, remote travel, spiritual intelligence, heart-based intelligence. There might even be a cure for Alzheimer's or schizophrenia, anything that is the disease of the mind or the brain. And I truly believe that the people who don't keep up with the developments of these two intangible worlds are going to feel lackluster, left behind, emotionless, kind of numb.
Hi. I want to address this message in English to the entire world to make sure that I will be well understood by everyone. You for sure heard about the tragic accident of Yevgeny Prigozhin the other day. Well, it was not an accident. I know that you know, and that you know that I know. So let's be clear and honest about all this after all. I don't care anymore. A quick Russian missile shot his plane down, and he was gone. 2 months ago, he tried to attack me with his army. I got to admit that I was very surprised that he believed that he could get away after what he did. When he visited me in Moscow, after his attempt to take me down, I gave him a little tap in the back, saying that we can forget about all this. He believed me. What a fool. I never forget and never forgive treason. I hope this is a clear message to everyone who'd fancy attempting a similar action. It won't be tolerated. Hi.
Soon we will enter an era where there will be no internet, no television, or telephone service. We will plunge into chaos, where your money, your empires, and your power will lose all significance. The sole concern for you and your loved and dear ones will be simple survival. However, in this impending scenario, you will sadly realize that you can no longer change anything. You will be powerless. By then, you will have lost all your media resources, thus losing influence over the masses, and your empires will be shattered. Your only chance to preserve your empire is to align with humanity and contribute to informing people and uniting all scientists into a single scientific research center. If we swiftly find a solution to create a shield against external cosmic influences, and if we revive the oceans, only then will we have a chance to save our empires and pass them on to your children. Soon we will enter an era where...
Vladimir Putin said, "I don't even need to wage war on France. All we need to do is liberate French-speaking Black Africa, and it will collapse on its own like rotten fruit. Africa is 1,000 times richer than Europe in terms of subsoil, but 1,000 times poorer in terms of development. All it would take is for African presidents to create their own currency. I give you my word, Europe will migrate to Africa. Our foreign policy is based on defending our national interests and international law. Russia is open to dialogue and cooperation with other countries, but we demand mutual respect. Russia is not looking for enemies, but neither can it ignore threats to its security. Weakness is the pretext used by the spineless to justify their impotence. International cooperation is essential to solving complex global problems. Russian history is a source of pride and inspiration for us all. What do you think of Vladimir Putin? Tell us in the comments and subscribe.
Do you realize or not that if Ukraine joins NATO and attempts to seize Crimea through military means, European countries will automatically be drawn into a military conflict with Russia? Of course, the potential of the entire NATO organization and Russia is not comparable. We understand that. We also realize that Russia is one of the leading nuclear powers, and in some other modern components, it is vastly superior when compared to other global powers. And there will be no winners. And you will be drawn into this conflict against your will. And you will not even have time to blink when you'll have to fulfill the fifth paragraph of the Treaty of Rome.
When the U.S. killed over a million civilians in Iraq, was that terrorism? When Israel terrorizes the Palestinian people every day, is that terrorism? When France and the U.K. and others armed the Saudi UAE to commit genocide in Yemen, where the U.N. said that over 400,000 are dead and 16 million are starving because of a genocide being carried out with the support of the U.S., the U.K., France and several European states, is that terrorism? When he's going to wake up and start living in the real world?
The strongest economy in the world. We have the most productive workers in the world. And given a fair shot, given a fair chance, Americans have never, ever, ever, ever let their country down. Never. Never. We never bow. We never bend. We never break when confronted with crisis.
How many BRICS nations are there? Five? No. Because while we were distracted the other night watching who will become number two behind Trump for the GOP nomination, The BRICS meeting in South Africa produced 6 new entrants into BRICS. As of January 1, 2024, 6 new members will join the original 5, which will encompass 46% of the world's population and a growing percentage of its wealth. What is the purpose of this? To de-dollar the world, to unseat the dollar as the world's currency. That is the only thing it is there for. We are in a currency war. You thought the Cold War lasted years and years and years. We are in a currency war, the likes of which has never been seen before, with one single purpose, to unseat the U.S. dollar and the world currency. Think about some of the new members. Iran, Saudi Arabia, the UAE. These are not just very large countries with incredible net worth behind them. They are global suppliers of oil. They are global suppliers of net worth. And by the way, they are countries that have historically utilized the petrodollar for their transactions. That's going away. That will impact the U.S. dollar. It will devalue the U.S. dollar. What will that cause? Inflation. Sorry, inflation's been going down the last year, you say? Well, inflation's still running 3.5%, not the 7% it was a year ago, but still at historic highs, to the point where the Fed has announced today, thanks to Jerome Powell, that he has confirmed we will, in fact, see more rises in interest rates in order to stem the tide of inflation. But when the dollar devalues, particularly the petrodollar, we will see inflation the likes of which has never occurred in human history. You think 7% is bad, 3.5% is bad. Try 15%, 20%, 30%. Try the kind of inflation we see in Argentina, Venezuela, and other third-party countries. It's going to be horrific to the American populace. But the Biden administration has allowed it to happen. Why have they allowed it to happen? I'm not going to summarize that, but they've caused distractions, whether it's Trump's mugshot, whether it's Ukraine. They've distracted the U.S. from the fact that we are about to become BRICS. I can go on my Apple iPhone and download my BRICS app, where I can now look at current places where I can spend my BRICS coin dollar. Now, I use the term dollars loosely, but I can spend my BRICS coins. How many BRICS nations?
Many countries are saying, in order to avoid this consequence of the imposition of sanctions by the United States, on the basis that you are using their currency, in order to avoid the consequences of sanctions that arise from that, let's walk away from the dollar. And hence the global discussion taking place about that. And it's some of it is bilateral. When Russia trades with China, there's no reason why they must trade used dollars to exchange. None. And so that even India is saying the same thing. So globally, there's a discussion that is taking place to say we must find alternative means of trading among ourselves and not subject ourselves to the situation where there's one currency in the world which becomes a global reserve currency, because it gives the country that is the issuer of the money, as the United States, it gives it the power to impose its will on everybody because you are depending on the dollar.
I just saw yesterday that 21 countries agreed to ditch the U.S. dollar and join BRICS. Let's go over the roster for World War III. First, we got Brunei, Cambodia, Indonesia, Laos, Malaysia. We got Philippines, Singapore, Thailand. Ooh, Thailand, I want to go there. Vietnam, Saudi Arabia, the UAE, Egypt. Shout out to my homies in Egypt. Iran, word. Argentina, Ethiopia. And Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, of course, the OG5. And then on the other side, there's the United States, the United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, Israel, France, Germany, Italy, Boston, shit, Japan, Ukraine, the U.S. bought Ukraine, by the way, Mexico, I think Mexico's on there. Honestly, shout out to BRICS, though, because now all these countries' economies will not be dependent on the U.S. economy. I'm not gonna lie though, if another war starts, it's not gonna be like any war in the past. It's gonna be AI and shit.
So I've been on the phone all day to the Mideast, and I've told our allies and people with connections to Iran, what I would do, I would tell Iran that if Hezbollah attacks Israel, we're gonna come after you, the Iranians, and have a coordinated effort between the United States and Israel.
What exactly would happen to the United States if we declared war on Iran and started blowing up their infrastructure? Lindsey Graham has no clue what would happen. He hasn't thought it through. He's almost 70 years old and he has no children. He doesn't care.
And that's the most important part, is a lot of these people, man, they're very much older than a lot of us watching this video, right? And even people in their 60s, right, that are watching this video, you guys still have, like, we all have life to live. So we have to watch our language. We have to really, really care about the future. So I feel that watching Joe Biden, Janet Yellen, and these people confirm exactly what this video is. It's people wanting, they want to, right? There's no peace talks. There's no, it's more like, yo, like, this is America's chance to do this, and this is America's chance to do that. I mean, what do you think that's going to lead to? Where do you think that's going to lead to? Exactly. And that's why I always tell everybody, and I told everybody, slow it down, man. Slow down. Everybody's emotional. This happened in 2001, remember? Everybody was emotional. And then we ended up entering a 21-year conflict that did not do us any favors. And what I mean by slow, obviously I can't tell DC to slow down, but I mean the people watching this content, I know a lot of y'all are mad, and a lot of people are mad, but this is just, it's deeper. It's spiritually deeper than what we think. And the enemy that is in control, they're talking like that. They're the ones that are trying to get us into those conflicts that are going to lead to another 20, 30 years for the military-industrial complex to do this.
You people like to say, let's forget, let's not blame anyone. Please stop that nonsense. When the Holocaust happened against the Jews, it was 1940s, 45. Not a single African country other than Ethiopia and those who had not been colonized was free. The first African country got independent, 1957. There is not a single Jewish person who will allow you to forget the Holocaust. And it's, in fact, there are crimes, not just in Israel, across the world against denial of the Holocaust. U.S. foreign policy, Israeli foreign policy is very key. It's a central issue. Africans, for some reason, must forget something that happened 50 years ago, if you are Zimbabwe, 80 years ago. Listen, we must always remind our friends from Europe and elsewhere that slavery was a crime against humanity, as is colonialism and neocolonialism. That killing Sankara in 1984 because you are opposed to communism and plunging his country into chaos that you are now trying to solve as a problem of poor governance is a shared responsibility. So we will take responsibility for our nakedness. But for goodness sake, a naked emperor cannot lecture us about how to be clothed. Pan-Africanism is not.
In the past week, we are hearing that WHO, the World Health Organization, is now saying that there needs to be a global unification or a pandemic treaty that can help the entire world brace for the next disease X, that we need to have unification around the globe so that way we can prepare ourselves for what is going to be coming. And they're saying that this is the generation that needs to do this. They said after experiencing the pandemic that just took place, that this should be fresh in the minds of everyone on Earth, that we should be able to unify and agree to come together to make sure that we do not have this wreak havoc on the people, the population of our planet yet again. Now, as I mentioned, this coming out from the WHO director that is calling for this pandemic treaty of peace to take place, and they're saying it needs to happen now, and they actually have a date that they'd like to see this implemented, and it is they'd like to have a meeting on this and come to a global agreement by May of 2024, so in just a couple months from now. Now, this is coming out on headlines. As I mentioned, this actually unfolded last week, but starting to see more articles popping up this week, giving more details as to what unfolded. Now, I'm going to be sharing with you guys the latest on this, and also this is going to be linked in the description below.
Today, we are imposing further targeted sanctions on three Israeli individuals involved in undermining stability in the West Bank. We have also designated two associated entities referred to as farms. These West Bank outposts are owned or controlled by designated individuals, have acted as a base from which to launch violent acts, and are illegal even under Israeli law. It is critical that Israel take additional action to stop settler violence and hold accountable those responsible for it. Today,
launching new airstrike. The world has witnessed a dramatic turn of events as the BRICS nations, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, have jointly taken a stand against the United Kingdom and the United States. This unprecedented move comes in the wake of recent missile attacks on Houthi rebels in Yemen, carried out by the UK and US. The situation has escalated to an international crisis, raising concerns about the global balance of power, the use of military force, and the consequences of such actions on diplomatic relations. Launching new airstrike. The world.
The 12 tribe rise.